Oh man, y'all are in for a good one. This is episode 34 of Crosshairs Radio. Today on the show, we have Ellen Noble, recently signed with Aspire Racing. That's Jeremy Power's team. Ellen Noble, national champion in cyclocross, badass on the mountain bikes, just finished crushing souls in national level crits. Great conversation with Ellen. She is just a joy to talk to. You know, normally in these conversations, I'll get into somebody's background. We'll get into how they started cycling. That seems to be the easy way to go and really build a conversation from there. Didn't even get that far with Ellen. We were like an hour in when I was like, oh, geez, we haven't even done that part. We're going to leave it for another day because the conversation just went off in a couple different tangents. Really, really great stuff. It made me happy talking to her, and I think it will do the same for your ears when you listen to this episode. Once again, we have a sponsor. We have a sponsor for this episode. It is JBV Coaching. JBV Coaching, they're in their 11th year of business. That is hard for me to believe because I've known those guys, I think, for about that long. So it's really great. It's great that this coaching company can last that long and that they have been around. It means that they're successful, that they are getting their clients results, clients like you. Cyclocross season is just around the corner. If you've never worked with a coach before, it is definitely worth getting in contact with these guys, talking to them and seeing if a program, if a coach is going to be right for you. You can have a prepared plan, like a 12-week plan just to get you ready for cross. You can have more in-depth conversations with a coach. You know, there are all different levels of coaching. You can dip your feet in or you can just dive head first. I think those guys will get you results. They're all experienced racers. They have more than 20 years of bike racing experience. They've been doing clinics and coaching for over 15 years. So give them a call, jbvcoaching.com. There's contact information on there. I'm sure you can get to them by email there as well. And want to thank those guys for supporting not only Crosshairs Radio, but also the Wide Angle Podium. And that really is our ongoing sponsor, and not even a sponsor. That's a part of the podcast family that this show belongs to. Wideanglepodium.com. Go there. That's where you can support the shows about cycling that you like to listen to. We have a whole host of shows. We've got the Slow Ride Podcast, the Meyerson Line, Kids Don't Follow, Honest Bicycle Program. Go in there. Pick out the shows that you listen to. You can become a member. You can donate to those shows monthly. You don't have to give a lot, but it really helps us do what we do. We say it every week, but it's true. So wideanglepodium.com, become a member. JBV Coaching, give them a call. Ellen Noble, sit down, put us in your ears, and get ready for a great conversation. Okay, let's talk to Ellen. Hey, Ellen, how's it going?
Hi, good. How are you?
Doing just fine. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, is it July already? It's nearing July, right? We're almost to July?
Yes, summer? I think it's July 1st.
Yeah, yep. And you are, you know, in the middle of road season, it seems.
Yeah, in the middle of road and mountain right now. Yep, just finished a big roadblock, and then I'm headed to Narweasels, which is a local mountain bike race,
yes,
tomorrow. So
okay. Well, that was actually going to be one of my first questions, because I know that in the past, and I know I'm just sort of jumping into the end, and I want to get into everything else also down the line, but in the past, I know that you've concentrated more on the mountain bike, it seems, when you're not racing cyclocross. This year, it seems like more road. Is that, you know, what's the change?
Well, I definitely went into the season anticipating to focus almost solely on mountain. It's always been a passion of mine. And it was actually, you know, how I got into cycling through mountain. But this season, I was given an opportunity to race a little bit of road. And I knew that speed work would help me a lot during cross. One of my main philosophies is train your weaknesses until they become your strengths. And so that was kind of my objective this season, was to become a lot stronger, because being a mountain biker, I'm usually like pretty comfortable on the technical stuff on the courses. But if we get to a flat out power section, that's usually where you'll see me fade during a race. So I really wanted to get in some speed work so that I could come into this season a lot stronger than I have been in the past. So I got a really great opportunity to race Tulsa Tough and the North Star Grand Prix with Jeremy Powers, my new teammate. And I took it, and it went a lot better than I had anticipated. So when I came home, I wanted to race the Fitchburg Longzhou because it's an hour from my house and I get to stay with two of my, like, my two best friends. So it, you know, it all just came together really, really well. And I ended up really loving it. I had never really had positive road racing experiences in the past, which is what had kept me away from the sport for so long. But Tulsa and North Star showed me that road racing actually can be really fun. And the environment and like the camaraderie was really, really special. And so I definitely see myself racing more road in the future, but for now it's all mountain until cyclocross starts.
Yeah, I think good experience might be a little bit of an understatement. I mean, you come out with Longzhou with two wins. I mean, and even before that, it looks like that Cyclonauts Criterium you won, third place at Tulsa Tough. Obviously, you caught on to crit racing pretty quickly. First off, you know, those first couple races when you're up there in that pro field, what's it like racing in there? How do you sort of adjust to that pack mentality, and what's your strategy going in?
Well, my strategy going into Tulsa was really just to understand that it was a learning experience. I had no expectations of the race. And actually, anyone that was with me prior to the event is probably laughing right now, because I was talking to anyone that I knew and I was like, do you know any girls in this race? Like, do you know, like, how do they normally finish? Like, do you think, am I going to make it? Am I going to get dropped? And like, that was before the first night of Tulsa. And I was like an absolute mess. And like, despite my efforts, I just couldn't stay mentally calm because I was like so worried that I was going to get dropped. And I just would have felt like I had flown all the way to Oklahoma to get pulled. And that would have kind of stung a little bit. And, you know, because I accepted I'm starting at the bottom of a sport again. And like last year at Sea Otter, I basically admitted like, yeah, I'm starting at the bottom of the mountain bike ranks. And I'm like ready to fight my way to the top, as I did with cyclocross in 2012 and, you know, mountain in 2014 and now road. And so I was pretty nervous, but I really just tried to go in with an open mind despite my nerves. And I just really tried to race my hardest. I tried to fake the confidence that I have in a cyclocross race and fight for the front. And that race is actually extremely technical. There were, I believe it was an 8-turn crit, but there was not a ton of pedaling. And for someone like me, I felt very, very confident just railing the turns. So I just tried to stay as far forward as I could. And then going into the last lap, I took a very tight line on a turn. I felt super confident. I didn't put anyone at risk, but I took a much faster line than the rest of the group was taking. And I found myself in second. I was passed by one lead out train on the last turn. And I managed to sprint for third. And I was actually really amazed. And it kind of showed, like, once I got into the race, I stopped worrying about getting dropped and just started really focusing on racing and doing what I know and just sort of like let the intuition take over. And so getting third that night at my first pro road tour criterium was kind of astounding. I was like, I was really surprised I surprised myself. So like that was a really special experience, and I was like pretty surprised, as I said. The next night was actually a lot more challenging. I think no one knew who I was. It was like one of my first races in the Aspire kit. And so I don't think that anyone really like worried about me too much. And so
yeah, that was my comment on Twitter. You went from, you know, at least in the road crit world, from unknown to having a target on your back within 24 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely, especially the way that I got third, like kind of following the girls that I knew were going to be fighting for the podium, and sort of like hopping on one of the lead out trains. I think that definitely didn't make me any friends. So the next day, I think a little bit of the team tactics were like protecting the lead out trains a little bit more. So like I had a really tough race the next day at the second stage of Tulsa, just because it was so so aggressive, and I was like, I was getting hit, like physically hit harder than I ever have in any European cyclocross race.
That's pretty amazing. Wow.
Yeah, it was like, it was actually really scary. I was like, hey, like there's no reason to do this. I've raced some races with some pretty aggressive people, and like this is next level. But you know, I just tried to deal with it and literally roll with the punches, and just tried to stay upright. But I definitely had to fight a lot harder, and I think I was 14th that day or 12th, which was disappointing after a pretty good showing the night before. But you know, it was good. It showed me both sides. It was like some days you're going to be able to hop on a lead out train, and some days you're going to get body slammed to the back of the field. So
sure, but it's
really got a good, a great sampler of pro road racing in 48 hours.
Yeah, totally. And it's also, it's something that you're going into this, and it's amazing. You know, granted, no one's looking out for you that first day, but you're in here, you're in a sport now, unlike cyclocross, unlike mountain bike, where having a team helps. Having a team is important, and you're this one woman team out there having to force your way in there. And yeah, the physical part's interesting, but I'll bet just having raced, you know, in cyclocross, especially in Europe during those World Cup races, mm-hmm. probably at least had you ready to get those elbows out and prepare for it, but still must have been a shock.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just being a confident bike handler, I can say with absolute certainty is the only reason that I didn't crash the rest of the field out that day, because like the way that these girls were leaning on me and hitting me and stuff like that, I was like, dang, if I had just locked up my brakes, the entire field would be on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I was definitely thankful for my bike handling ability that day, because it was getting sketchy.
Yeah. And you know, going back to the more positive race at that third place finish the night before, you sort of mentioned it, technical, but also having all of those turns, and, you know, it's pretty clear that just having really good power and explosive power is one of your strengths, that being able to come out of the corners, that must have been comforting in that it was almost similar to a cross effort.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely played to my strengths, but it wasn't really something that I knew going into it. But looking back, it was definitely a really great course for me. Having that very punchy effort is really good for me. So I think more criteriums like that are definitely something that would like to do more of in the future. But I definitely want to keep working on the races that are more like the third stage of the Fitchburg Longjaw, where it's like one long drag uphill, a 180, and then one long drag downhill.
Yeah.
Because that's definitely still a weakness of mine.
Yeah, and then of course, people like me who just live and die for cyclocross see something like this, and then see what you did, you know, last weekend as well, winning that Omnium, winning those two races, which we'll talk about, and you know, we get this little nervousness that, oh no, now the women's road world is going to know that Ellen Noble is a good road racer, and she's going to get pulled away from cyclocross.
So this is something that I like to talk about just about everything. You know, I like to have a plan for a lot of stuff. I'm kind of a nervous person, so I really need to have a plan, or else it, you know, freaks me out a little bit. And I've definitely talked about like where I'm going to go from here, regardless of what discipline I end up racing in the future, whether it's mountain, road, you know, something different entirely, which I don't really see happening, but, you know, just for sake of conversation. Regardless, I would like to maintain a focus on cyclocross. It's something that I love more than anything. I think it's definitely like my strongest discipline. And regardless of where I go from here, I'd always like to maintain a strong cyclocross showing.
Sure.
And I think especially on the women's side, because of like the races and the schedule and stuff like that, you know, because like we don't have like a Tour de France that's really taking, you know, you're not taking 21 days away from your road season and stuff like that. I think you're seeing a lot of really strong professional women racing cyclocross in another discipline, like whether it's Ava or Katarina, Pauline, Marianne, you know, even Katie Compton now racing.
Yeah, that was fun to see her out on the road.
You know, there are so many. I don't want to leave anyone out, but there are so many women who are racing really, really amazing seasons on the mountain and the road, and then coming and like, even if they come in a month late, you know, you'll see them racing through the world championships. And I think that's like, that's super inspiring for me.
It is.
I know that it can be done.
Yeah. It also is an interesting, you know, and I don't, you know, I like it when we sort of go out on these tangents, cause we can talk about whatever, but I think this is important, and it's something that I have a hard time getting my head around, because I think it's great that in the women's sport, we get to see top women racing every discipline, which you don't see on the men's side. But the flip side of that, one of the main reasons for that is because the men are making huge amounts of money to race on the road, so they don't have to race anything else. And they don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's almost this double-edged sword. But, you know, so I think about that. But then on the other side, I'm like, well, these men just sort of have to suck it up. And there are so many guys, you know, we could have more Zdenek Stibars and guys like that who are like, hey, I'm going to go race half, you know, cyclocross as well. And it doesn't seem to really, you know, hurt their road season.
No, definitely not. I think, it's definitely a drawback for women's racing. It's like, yeah, they're not making enough money that they can like, that, you know, they want to be racing year round. But, that in and of itself is like a blessing and a curse. It's like, yeah, there's not as much money in women's racing, but there's also, a lot fewer women, doping. So, you know, like with money comes problems. And, so I think while it's disappointing to see that there's not like this huge amount of money in women's racing, there's still money to be made, and that money is a lot less corrupt. And so I am absolutely like pushing for equality. I want more women in sport, but I'm also understanding that, like, you know, you're seeing a woman like, you know, Catherine Pendrell, for example. She's not a cyclocross racer, but she's not a frequent cyclocross racer, but I'm a huge fan. And, you know, you see someone like her and she's just so down to earth and like very, she's a clean athlete and she's been multi-time world champion. And it's like, you know, a team like Luna has been a really great team for women's cycling, and they've produced a lot of world champions. And so it's comforting to know that like these women are being supported as professional athletes, not just as professional women. And they're also winning world championships. And so I think that's really cool to see. And so it's inspiring for me to know that like you can be the best in the world and not dope, which I don't think that you can always say of men's cycling.
Yeah, I think that's true. And yeah, Pendrell, I got the opportunity to see her race and mountain bike for those last two World Cups, and just mm-hmm. so much fun to watch. So smooth on the bike and mm-hmm. so strong. So back to sort of finishing out this roadblock. Mm-hmm. Actually, before I get to the long jump races, I want to ask you, just since we're talking about racing year round, how do you get to this point? You know, where, when you're done racing, what was it, Hoogerheide? Was that your last cyclocross race?
And Worlds.
Okay, Worlds. Did you race after Worlds at all?
No, I was done. Okay. I had to go back to school. I had already missed 2 weeks of the semester.
All right, so we're talking February. You know, you're racing in February, obviously, where I'm assuming that you're peaking for that time period to have a good showing at Nationals, have a good showing at Worlds. How do you then turn around and get ready? What's the training looking like from there until now when you're crushing these crit fields?
So oddly enough, I'm trying not to say this and sound like weird about it, but I wasn't training like specifically for these races. I'm like, everything I'm doing right now is focused on cross. Like I haven't done I really haven't done any intensity this year. And the only intensity I've gotten is from, racing a little bit. And so basically like I took 6 weeks off the bike, completely reset. Most of that was like coach prescribed. But I also needed that time. Like I spent 6 weeks like in the library, staying up until like 2 a.m. trying to catch up on school. But after that, I did a really, really, really big block of like steady state endurance. And then I mostly just, that took so, like, that was the biggest block I had ever done. It was, yeah, 6 weeks of like really, really, really hard, long days on the bike. And after that, it took me like a month to recover. Like my, I'm still young and that was the biggest training block I'd ever done. So it took me a really long time. Like my work capacity is not that great yet. So I had to take a lot of time, like basically the entire month, like half of May and half of April, I mean, half of April and half of May to get back from that. But afterwards, like just after I finished my base block, I went and raced Paris to Ancaster. And amazingly enough, like I have no idea how my body did it, but I was actually able to go hard. Like my heart rate had been so beaten down over the course of like those 8 weeks that I didn't think I would have a single like bit of punch in my legs, but I somehow made it happen. And that was kind of like the first intensity that I did. And I've done a couple of mountain bike races since then. And that's kind of like, that was sort of my training going into it. But well, as you said, we're racing into February. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to be doing, like insane efforts in April because I want to be able to have that, like that kick come November, December, January. So it's really kind of about like, I'm holding back a bit in my training right now.
Yeah.
Just to stay mentally like psyched for when it's pissing rain and like there's salt on the roads and it's, yeah, you know, and it's dark out at 4:00. Like that's when I really want to be psyched to get on my bike. So,
well, that's good to hear because I was going to be like just shocked if you had the same thing. It was funny when I think it was Matthew Vanderpoel when he jumped right into like, I think he was on a mountain bike the day after Worlds, and I think it was even Jeremy because I think I put something out there on Twitter like no off season, and Jeremy actually responded. He was like, "Don't you guys take any time off?" And like Vanderpoel and Wout Van Aert both like sort of were giving Powers a hard time saying, "Hey, off season is old school."
You know? No, our bodies need time to.
Oh yeah, no. Well, that just gave me the opportunity to call Jeremy an old man, which he didn't appreciate.
Yeah, basically. But I mean, Jeremy, I actually think like, you know, speaking about that, like Jeremy's been in the sport for a really long time. Like Matthew and Wu are both very young. Like been in the sport for a long time. So I think like what he's done is obviously he's doing something right. He's won 4 national titles, but I'm saying like just over the course of his career, he's obviously done something right because he's still in it at 33. So I think like, it really goes to show, like, if Jeremy's taking an off season, he's obviously done something to promote like long and prosperous career. So it's like, if Wu and Matthew want to like, you know, never take an off season, a couple of years into their also extremely successful careers, that's fine. But I think like what we're doing is I'm looking at where I'm going to be 10 years down the road as well. So like, you know, I'm 20 right now, and some of the best, like the best women in the world are like, in their 30s. You know, it's women have such a long window. It's such a long period of time where they can be racing. So I really want to do stuff that's like taking care of my body, not just now, not just to make me strong and healthy now, but when I'm 30 after having raced for 15 years already. Yeah. So I think that's part of the reason I'm taking an off season because your body can only go so far.
and I think that's the good plan. And I think also if you look at Vanderpoel and Van Aert now, you know, despite that bluster in February and March, they're both I think taking it easy now, so it's
it was funny at the time. I mean, everyone wants to like rip mountain bikes the day after Worlds because it's like you're peaked and you're
great.
Like super fit, but like now, I want to be enjoying time now. I'm like, oh, I want to go out and ride my mountain bike for a couple of hours because it's sunny, not like the day after Worlds when, you know, we're still stuck in Belgium and it's pissing rain.
Right. So the way that you are approaching this and just hearing you talk and having spent time with Jeremy, who owns the team that you're now on, and congratulations for that. That's
thank
awesome.
You.
But you guys seem to have a similar process Very detail oriented, very, you know, future oriented. I mean, that's the thing about Jeremy. He's always looking down. He's already talking about 2-3 years from now, you know, today. Do you all have those conversations? I mean, is that something that attracted you to his program? I mean, I know you were in the Jam Fund, so you were already there. Maybe it's all you knew, but I'm assuming also that there are other people interested in giving you a pro contract for cyclocross.
Yeah. I think, yeah, there's so many things I want to say about that. I mean, the future thing with Jeremy and I, like, I think that we're pretty like-minded. I mean, obviously, like, we have our differences, but I think we are very process-driven and future-driven. So I remember I went to Vegas with him this year. I was kind of like interning, if you will, with Aspire to see kind of if it was a good fit. Sort of with the discussion of me possibly joining the team in the next year if it worked out. But also because Jeremy kind of, we called it like the Jam internship. So like the rider on Jam that was doing well at the C2s that like wanted to go to the C1s, and I qualified for the World Cup. So they would send a Jam rider to these races with Aspire. So I was going there with him and I got 19th at the World Cup, which was fine by World Cup standards, but I knew that it wasn't my best race and I was pretty disappointed. And I just felt like there was so much more that I could have done to like be better. And I remember I kind of like complained to him, and he's funny. He's sort of like no buts about it in a lot of ways. He just said to me, he goes, look at me. When are Worlds? February. What is it now? It's September. He's like, do you know how many months are in between Worlds in February? And now he's like, you need to chill out, ease into it. And I was like, you're right, you know, because like I got caught up in the moment. And one of my like favorite expressions is sometimes it can be hard to see the forest through the trees. And so I was like so focused on this one race, like the first big race in September, that I was forgetting about how many races separated me from the world championships, like the race that really, really mattered. And so, yeah, having a team director and a friend and a teammate and a mentor that is like similarly minded to me is really helpful. I think if Jeremy was like, all we care about is like the first couple of weeks in September, that would be hard for me because I really do want to be going well for Worlds and like, you know, Nationals, like the big World Cups at the end of the season. I think that would be a challenge. And so knowing that Jeremy really shared similar ideals to me was definitely sweetened the deal, joining his team. I think it helps that like Jeremy worked with my coach Al. They both founded the Jam Fund together. So, and as well as Makunda, but yeah, so like they're very similar. Al and Jeremy worked together for a long time. So I think a lot of what I have come to like all of the things that matter to me in this sport are sort of things that I've learned from Al because I've been working with him for so long. And I know that him and Jeremy have been friends for a very, very long time. So I think like when you know someone as well as sort of like this whole East Hampton cycling contingent has known each other, I think you start to share similar ideals with like slight variations from person to person. So, but we're all very like focused on not only this season, but like, how is this going to help me down the road?
Sure. I mean, yeah, there's a definite culture to it. That's what I think has been created, especially East Hampton and that whole group of people. There's definitely a culture and it pays dividends.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting how you mention him telling you that, and I'm sure after Cross Vegas and how you weren't happy with your result. And I know that in his own head, he was probably talking to himself as well while he's saying that because he wanted to do better too. But speaking with him recently, those first two World Cups are pretty much, you know, A-plus races for him. Those are big priorities. Are you going into that block with that same mentality?
Yes, for sure. I think it's sort of, I have like mixed emotions about them. Like I really want to be going as well as I can. But really what that's going to mean for me as of right now is making sure that everything is as dialed as possible and that I've gotten in a good amount of training leading up to it. But I don't want, you need to walk that fine line between like kind of peaking and just feeling like dialed and confident. So like, I'm going to have done another big training block going into it. And I want to make sure that I'm like really rested and that I've done you know, all of the off the bike things that I can to feel good and have my best race and have done some good training and intensity. But I think sometimes like the big early September block of like all of the C1s and World Cups, I think you're going to see a lot of people come out really, really, really hot and then sort of coast from there for the rest of the season because they sort of like, they just did too much. So I really want to walk that fine line of going well and overcooking it. So yeah, my main objective is to be as fast as I can by doing all of the other things well and then have a good training block, but not so much that I'm like, all right, is the season over yet?
Right.
Like I've reached my max.
Right. All right. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit because okay. We got away from sort of what's happening right now. And I just wanted to ask you about these Longzhou Classic races. You're coming in to these crits. You have a lot of the women that you were racing against in Tulsa, sort of the top end of that pro women's field, are at the Tour of American Dairyland. So they're in Wisconsin racing that. You come in to this weekend of racing now thinking you're a favorite. I mean, what's the mindset now? What is sort of changed from having this good road experience and now coming in here with, you know, a strong field, but not as strong a field as it could be?
I think it's funny. I know a lot of people that say that confidence is dangerous, but for me, it's something I've lacked for a really long time, especially in my like spring, summer disciplines. So after winning the Stillwater crit at North Star, I actually felt confident for the first time because I felt like I actually like played my cards well enough. Like it wasn't just the sheer fitness. Like it wasn't just the effort that got me away, but like I timed it right. I felt like I read the situation and then it was also like a physical effort that I was like, I kind of unlocked a new level of like, of suffering. And I think that like kind of to tangent off just for a second, I think that like being able to suffer as much as possible comes with mental strength. So like the stronger I become mentally, like the more I work with my sports psychologist and kind of like fix the negativity that I deal with sometimes, the more I'm able to suffer and dig deep. So knowing that I was able to put down an effort like I did at Stillwater, and come away with that win at a relatively stacked field, at a relatively stacked race, I felt actually very confident. Like I felt prepared at the start line. And I think that's honestly the best feeling in the world. Like winning a race feels really, really, really good. But I think going to a start line and not feeling like you forgot something or not wishing that you had done an extra set of intervals or like wishing that you hadn't eaten a breakfast burrito for breakfast, it's one of the best feelings out there. Like I'd liken it to the feeling of winning because it just feels really good to know that like you've done the work and that everything is set and dialed. So I didn't feel like I was a favorite at the Longzhou. It wasn't really a thought that I had, that like had occupied my mind, but I did feel like I was prepared to have my best race there, whatever that was. You know, if riding my best race tactically and physically won the race, then I guess I could have put me out as a favorite. But I think really I was just prepared to like set myself up well going through the whole race, possibly make a couple of attacks if I felt rested enough and really work on positioning and fighting for the last corner and sprinting as hard as I could. So I felt like I was able to do that day, or like for the 2 days that I won. And the last day, I didn't feel as confident. I was very, very tired just from the last, you know, I had done a lot of racing and riding in the last 14 days and it was starting to catch up to me, but I still felt like I rode a really good race. I just didn't have it at the end. So I had my best race. I rode my best race, but it didn't work out in my favor that day. And I think that's an important thing as well. You can have your best race and get third, and sometimes you cannot ride a good race and win.
Sure.
That's
sure.
Happened to me plenty of times where I'm like, yeah, I kind of felt like crap while I was doing this.
Yeah, and that's that's a lot of important stuff that I want to circle back on, especially the sports psychology aspect of it. But I do want to just point out from that first day, it must have been fun. You're in there and you're fighting, and it looks like a cyclocross race at the beginning. You know, you got Amy Cutler, Emma's in there, you're in there. That's the top three. So it was sort of fun to see to see that podium that I think we're going to see a lot of come fall as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's always fun to race, you know, especially with Emma, because like we race together year round. And so it's always fun to like race with her in a bunch of different disciplines and just get to, it's cool having other like young women in the sport that aren't just good. She's not just a good U23 racer. Like she's a good racer. And so that's really cool. That's badass.
Yeah. And it was cool to see also, which, you know, shouldn't come as a huge surprise, that she's now moved up from that development team to the Cannondale Cyclocross World team.
Yeah.
So what I think is going to be fun for fans of U.S. cyclocross this year is that you have two really big, you know, rivalries, and you all are all friends as well. So you have you and Emma, you know, both Aspire and Cannondale Cyclocross World, and then Jeremy and Steven, you know, so it's just sort of neat that at the top there are just these two pairs. And you know, especially that, you know, Jeremy started that team, but everybody has sort of moved up. The other thing that is cool is everybody has moved through the program. It's almost like baseball in a farm system, you know, that y'all started on the, you know, Emma and Curtis on the Cyclocross World Development Team, and you and Steven on Jam Fun, and then just, you know, moving up into that top ranks.
Yeah. I mean, it really shows that development works, and it's really cool to see. Like, I'm sure that, you know, I don't want to speak for Al or for the Cannondale director, but I hope that it shows them like their endless hours of talking to us on the phone, gluing tubulars themselves, like driving us to these crazy races in wherever the heck we're going. All of those things are actually paying off. And I know for me personally, and I'm sure I speak for Emma and Curtis and Steven and all of the other people that have gone from development to like a full-fledged pro racer, that it means so much. Like knowing all of the time and effort that Al has put in running the Jam Fund for the last couple of years, I really like, I can never thank him enough for all of that. And like the mentorship from Jeremy and all of the like logistical help from Macunda, like all of their efforts have really helped me become a pro on Aspire. And it's like, it's still kind of hard to believe. And I know that I couldn't have done it without them, because the year before I joined Jam, I was getting like decent results. Like I was getting decent results for what I was capable of. And so I really think that like my first year on Jam shows that just having like good support, like whether it's emotional or mechanical or like equipment, whatever, it really shows like just what you can do in just in a very short period of time. So yeah, development works. And I think it's really, really cool to see all of these riders come through very strong development programs and join the best teams in the country.
The other important part of that picture, which, and the whites have been able to do, and that you're doing as well, is that you're not sacrificing college to do this, and that these teams, even at the pro level, are working with athletes to make sure that you can balance both.
Yeah, absolutely. I've really appreciated like the help that Jam has put in with me going to school. I mean, everyone always jokes, like naturally the team has to give me a hard time if I'm like, hey guys, like I'm gonna go study. There's always a resounding nerd. But but also like we definitely hightailed it out of races before, because I'm like, I have to get to class tomorrow at 9 a.m. and like we'll drive through the night or something crazy, you know. Like they've been super supportive of me, and I'm really happy. I found out the other day that I made the dean's list this semester, which was like, I almost started crying. I swear I was so happy, because this was the hardest semester yet at school, and I missed 2 weeks for Worlds. I had team camps, I had traveling for racing and training and stuff like that. So I was really, really happy. And going forward, I'm transferring into a new program that's going to allow me to really, I can put school and racing first without having to compromise anything, because I will be able to go online for the fall semester. And that means that I can go to Europe as much as I like, as much as I need to, and travel and train and race like a pro without having to feel like I'm not getting like I'm doing both things poorly. You know, like sometimes I have to cut out on training to make it to class, but I'm still late to class. And so it's like, well, I just messed up my training and I'm not even on time. So I feel like I'm kind of sacrificing both, but this new program through UMass will allow me to do them both really well. And I'm really excited. And
what's the, do you mind me asking what the new program is? What are you pursuing?
It's called University Without Walls.
Okay.
And it's for actually like one of their main demographics is professional students. So the coolest thing is, I'm not the first professional athlete that they've seen. And I really like that. Like, it's cool. It's cool not to be the first one doing something. Like, when I was in high school, I started a program at my school that's actually very similar to what I'm joining now at UMass. But so, like, I was really the first, like, professional athlete that my school had, like, tried to work with. But now at UMass, they're like, oh, yeah, we see kids like you all the time. So, you know, I'm entering University Without Walls, and I can go to class full time spring semester. But for the fall, I'm going to be fully online, and I'm really, really, really looking forward to it, because I feel like I'm going to be able to get the most out of everything that I do.
Yeah, that's great. And that actually was a question I was going to ask, like, how you approach that if you were talking to professors beforehand and sort of working with the school, knowing that there were these blocks you weren't going to be available.
For stuff like that in the past, and like if it comes up in the future, it's always been, I try to give them all the details. It's not something that I'm usually like super comfortable with. Like, I don't want to, like, if I met a random person on the street and they were like, hey, what do you do for a job? I'd be like, I'm a cyclist. Like, I'm not always like psyched on the pitch, you know, because I,
well, it's a hard one to sell.
It does feel like bragging.
Right. Well, points,
you know?
Yeah.
And you know, my friends love to do it. They're like, she's a national champion. I'm like, guys, cut it out. Oh my God, you're embarrassing me.
Love it.
with my teachers, it's something that I know if I give them the info, they're going to be less likely to be annoyed. So I do use it to my advantage at times. So I'll be like, yeah, so I'm one of, because you have to be inside the top 50 to qualify for the World Cup. So I'm like, I'm ranked 20th in the world of this sport that you probably have no idea what it is. If I like send them an email, I send them a link to a YouTube video of cyclocross or something. And I'll be like, this is this weird, weird sport that we do. And like, I'm one of like 20 women to go to this race and like, you know, this and that. And I kind of like give them all the details. Or like before Worlds, I was going to miss 2 weeks of the semester, the first 2 weeks. So I was like, I'm like ranked second in the world for U23 right now. And I'm going to this event. I'm going to the world championships and this and that. And so I like try to explain it. And oftentimes my teachers are actually really excited. And so I really, really appreciate that. Like, it would be super easy for them to be like, well, too friggin' bad, drop the class. But a lot of them are like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see. I'll follow the results and see how you do. Like, we look forward to you coming back. Like, bring us back a medal.
Oh, that's great.
So it's really, really nice. But I'm really happy to be going online for a semester, because I don't feel like I'm sacrificing any of my education. And I also don't have to bug my teachers, because like, I know it's a lot of work for them. So sure. I'm really happy not to be like putting that weight on them anymore.
Yeah, that sounds like a great balance. So here's a question, just because we're talking about, this is almost for me, and sorry that I'm ignorant on this. So the U23 women, are there going to be U23 World Cup races other than Worlds this year? That's happening, isn't it?
No, not that I know of.
Okay.
There was definitely talk of it. I had crossed my fingers and my toes that it was going to happen, but I've heard that it's probably not going to happen this year.
Because there was something about the jersey, in that the World Championship jersey can be worn, and that maybe this is just in the future, but it looked like, I'm getting this completely wrong, both races, elite women, U23 women, were going to be at the same time for World Cup races.
That's what they've been doing for mountain this year.
Yeah.
Or at least on like at the Karens World Cup.
Yes, yes.
They started the U23 women 1 minute down, which kind of stinks, but that's fine.
Yeah, because then you're just working through a lot of that back
traffic. Yeah, like you're just working through traffic. I have not heard anything about that, but that would be great. Like if we could have our own rankings and like have a World Cup leader and stuff like that, like that would be a huge step and I would love to see that. So the last thing I heard was that there's probably not going to be a U23 category because they were having a hard time with the timing.
Right.
But you probably know better than I do. I feel like you hear the insider info. Yeah, I'm usually like the last one to find out. As a racer, you like show up to an event, they're like, oh, did we tell you we added a U23 category last night? You're like, what? When was this? When did this happen?
Oh, you're not alone. I think it's great, especially I think I was the first one to sort of get out the word on that there are going to be radios allowed in the World Cup and the world. But the number of like European pros that were like, really? I'm like, you guys should know this. But yeah, it seems like
always kept in the dark.
Yeah. And UCI, not the best at getting information out there.
Nope.
So you had mentioned before about, working with a sports psychologist to especially to become more positive. I'm going to guess who you're working with. We can talk about it but mainly I just want to know when that started and what changed about how your outlook and just going about racing and what the benefits have been.
I started working with Dr. Keim.
That was going to be my guess.
Yep. I'm not like, don't need to make a secret of it. I think a lot of people like to keep that, sort of like,
I was also going to ask you quiet. That too. If you don't want to talk about it, we can just cut it out.
No,
it's
that's
not a
fine.
Big deal.
Honestly, I think I know a lot of people actually that share this mentality. Like there are some things that I like to keep secret because it's like not my intellectual property, like training stuff.
Oh yeah.
But
definitely.
There are also like, there are certain things that like, if other people started working with a sports psychologist, like that's good. It like, it betters you, like I think that working with Dr. Keim has been a lot more than just like making me a better athlete. Like, it's helped me a lot in life. And so I feel like that's something that I really want to share with people. Like if you're dealing with something that like you can't go through alone or something like that, like you need to talk to someone about it. Or like if you want to talk to someone about it, like by all means you should. So like, I make no secret of the fact that I work with Dr. Keim. And so we started working together last summer and in July. And a month later, I went to the Wyndham World Cup. And I had probably my toughest race, like my most gritty race I had ever had, where like I was in 15th, like a minute up and a minute back from like 14th and 16th respectively. And I was like, all right, so I'm in 15th and I could get 15th if I just maintain this. And I was like, but let's see if I can suffer a little bit more. And I remember reading, for some people, they may remember Willow Korber. And I remember reading like kind of when I like fell in love with Willow as an athlete. She was like my first like pro cycling crush. She used to talk about, she would play a game with herself about like, how much can I suffer today? And I did not understand that concept. But at Wyndham, like that concept sort of clicked for me where I was like, okay, how hard can I go? Like how many people can I pass right now? And so I was absolutely pinned on the climb up and I like could hardly see straight on the way down. It was just sort of like, keep it upright. And I ended up getting 11. So I passed four people. I made up a lot of time. Like there were pretty big gaps. And so like, it actually clicked to me the other day. I was like, that was only a month after I started working with Dr. Keim. And I realized like just having someone to talk to and like address the very real but completely unnecessary emotions that I was feeling helped me just have a race where I was able to focus on just racing. I guess there's no reason to not like just be honest about it. I'm a young woman in a very, very like cutthroat industry. So for me, I feel a lot of pressure about like, I feel a lot of social pressure, growing up in a sport where everyone's very thin. Like you feel a lot of, like a lot of physical insecurities. And after my dad passed away in 2012, I feel like I had a lot of like residual emotions from that. And it was very traumatic. So like working through all of those things with Dr. Keim, and just sort of like being able to talk about the good things and really, really talk about the bad things and like have her, if I'm like, I'm really, really nervous about going to this event because I'm going to be with a lot of new people that I don't know. Like, how do I handle that will like be able to work through that. And so when I get to that event, I'm not worried about making new friends and whether or not they'll like me. I'm really just able to focus on doing my job as an athlete. So it's helped me so much on the bike. I'm able to go that much harder, but it's also helped me a lot off the bike. And that's actually where a lot of my stressors are, off the bike, surrounding cycling events, but not the race itself. Cause that's actually kind of the easy, natural part. I'd suggest that anyone that's thinking about it, you know, whether it's Dr. Keim or any sports psychologist that you know, I think like if you're feeling something that you don't want to go through on your own, or even, you know, even I have a lot of really, really amazing people in my life that I can talk to. And I'm really, really thankful for that. But Dr. Keim is kind of a person I talk to about things that I don't want to like put on other people, or that I want to keep more to myself, I guess.
Yeah, that's great too, because it's, you know, what I loved, what you said, it's real but unnecessary emotions. And that's one that's going to stick with me, because that's so true. And you're probably wasting so much energy on these things that you don't need to be at that time. And it's,
yeah.
And the other stuff too, just about being a young woman, sort of hits home with me personally. I have two daughters, one who's, you know, 12 years old. She's in theater labs, like drama camp right now.
Yeah.
And having to try out 2 days ago, like she couldn't eat. She was like crying as I was taking her, you know, to the train to go to this thing. And it was just like, you know, we ended up just going down there together. But yeah, I was just like, oh man, this is like, and it was so much stuff that, just like you're saying, it has nothing to do really with the goal. It's just everything surrounding it. You know, it's all new people. It's all just a new situation. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's like a super important thing, like bringing the theater thing into it. It's not just cycling. It's doing anything like competitively or professionally, like competing for something is really, really stressful. And especially like with all of the media that surrounds cycling, it can be really hard to read stuff where it's like, where you're being like openly criticized by any person who makes a Twitter account. That's really hard. Like that's something that's been really, really, really challenging for me. And that's why like, I won't say anything, you know, I'm not the kind of person that's like, all right, everyone logging off of social media for a while. I'll just like cut it out. You know, I can't look every now and then, because like people are just being too critical, and it hurts me.
And I think you know, we don't have to dwell on it, but you had one of those situations that was worldwide. Everybody saw where they're going to be critical of you, which was, I mean, just as fans of yours, I mean, it was really hard to see every dude with a Twitter account mansplain to you how you need to ride through the finish line, you know, before you start celebrating. And that, I don't know how you handled that whole situation.
I did not handle it well. I will just say that I did not work with a sports psychologist at that point. And those emotions on my teammates.
Yeah, because that was going to be my question, is like, how did you work through that? But obviously it seems like, and if people don't, I don't know. It was just the end of a race. You thought you had it won. You posted up. Like, I guarantee you every Cat 4 cyclocross dude who gave you advice on what you should have done would have done the exact same thing had they ever been in that position in their entire life, which most of them have not.
I mean, that's like the sort of the funny thing is, and that's actually like, I guess prior to that happening, but I never really associated the two, like kind of one of my unwritten rules, like in being a friend, a girlfriend, a teammate, a coach, like any of those things, a mentor, like I try not to criticize people for trying, you know? So like when I'm working with people on skills, so like whether it's casually, like we're just fooling around in a field or something like that, or like if I'm working at a skills clinic or something like that, if someone's trying something and I know that they're pushing themselves, I'm not going to make fun of them for it. Last summer I was learning how to bunny hop barriers, and the first 15 times through, I was smashing both rims, like just absolutely. I'm surprised, like the fact that the aluminum did not just crack is miraculous. But like, no, I think everyone sort of knows my unwritten rule. Like, no one made fun of me because I was pushing myself. It was something that I didn't know how to do when I was learning. So like, there's no reason for people to make fun of me for hitting my wheels and like smashing my rims on these barriers, because, you know, no one's like an authority on barrier hopping. So like, I shouldn't. And that's, I like to be encouraging. Like, I'm a total goofball and I love to tease all of my friends about everything. But if someone's pushing themselves, I don't want to make fun of them. I don't want them to feel bad, because I don't want people to not feel confident trying new things. Like, I want to be a person that pushes people to try new stuff. And so I kind of circling back to this, like supercross horror that will follow me for the rest of my life. I tried something new. I did like a very, racing, like that was like the most confident move I had ever made, like trying to attack a supercross. And there was so much confusion and so many things that happened that day that played into that moment happening like it did. There were no announcers. There were no lap cards. There was like nothing that could tell me, like, you know, there were a lot of things that went wrong that day. And it was kind of like the perfect storm of early winning.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is that you followed that up with more wins. You got a national championship after that. I mean, you say it will follow you for the rest of your life. I don't think so. I think that especially in the age of the internet, you've already proved anybody who criticized you that they're just idiots, that it's already gone, you know, and that you came back and you were able to say, all right, yeah, putting that behind me, and you went in and you started winning races again.
I think that's a good point. I joke that it will follow me forever, but I think the only times that it's brought up is kind of like how you brought it up. Like, yeah, how did you come back from that? Like, I think now I'm able to use it as a learning experience. Like, I did a shop talk at a local shop at Steve the Bike Guy's Velo Studio in Sherbourne, Mass. And it was kind of like the majority of the audience was young athletes, mostly cyclists, but other like runners and hockey players as well. And they kind of, someone brought it up, someone that knew me several years ago had asked about it. And rather than being like, yeah, so do you still feel like a buffoon for posting up too soon? They're like, you made a mistake and a lot of people saw it. How did you come back and not let that defeat you? And so I think like, I've actually been able to turn it into kind of a positive thing of like, yeah, I am more than like this silly mistake that I made. So I think now I really am just trying to use it as a learning and growth experience, rather than, I don't think anyone's like still making fun of me for
no,
it.
No, you know, and to be perfectly honest, and I think I had talked to Arlie about this as well, is that the lesson I see from that is not even yours. It's hers. It's that don't sit up. Don't give up,
yeah.
You know, keep going as hard as you can. You never, I mean, it could have been posting up too early. It could have been, you could have had a mechanical in the last 100 meters of the race and been over at the side, you know, standing over your bike. Anything could happen. Mm-hmm. So even from that second place position, just sort of pushing through and not stopping was
yeah,
the lesson that I like to take away from that situation.
Well, so funny enough, to circle back to the road conversation again, at Stillwater this year, I tacked off the front and I was in a 2-person break for most of the race. One lap to go, the 7 women that remained caught us. And it was like, it was the peloton, but it was definitely also the chase, because like people were just, you know, falling off the back and getting pulled. So it was like, it was kind of like an odd group that remained, and they caught us, and I actually was off the back. Like, they just moved right through me, as I jokingly call it, Taco Bell. and we, I was like off the back, but I just sort of let it go. I like to say death or glory at that point. And I just sort of like gave it everything I had in the last couple turns. Just like no brakes. I was like, this could be the tipping point on these tires, but I'm going to find out. And I ended up riding onto the back of the group again. And so we went into the climb, and I just decided like, don't give up. Don't settle for, I was like, I'll end up 8th. This is fine. I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, bleed out your eyeballs to get as far up as you can on this last hill. I mean, and the hill is just a total punch in the face. Like, it kills. And I had already done it 15 times that day, but I was like, just one more effort and then you're done. And I ended up like, you know, there was an issue. Like, I literally got hit by a woman who like swung far right and hit me and almost knocked me off my bike. But I was like, don't give up, keep going. And that's when I ended up moving to the front And so I think that sort of like brings back to the Supercross thing where I was like, don't give up. And I ended up being in first, but it almost came back to bite me because I was so delirious that I was sprinting for the white line, but inside of the white line was a black line. And that was actually the finish line. So when I hit the white line, I put my arm up.
Yeah, because I think, and believe me, that thought went through everybody's mind when they saw the picture of that finish line picture that they posted.
And this is going back to me sometimes just logging off of any social media because I was getting so much criticism that I didn't even feel good about the win at that point.
Oh,
I was
that's
like,
awful.
This has like ruined it for me. And the funny thing is, if you look like, the photos that were at an angle of the finish line, like the professional photos, it looks really close, but the finish, like the actual professional timing photo was not nearly as close.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
no,
it was definitely
I'm sure it's frustrating as hell, but that's,
but it is,
you know,
very frustrating because I felt like it really took away from like my overwhelming joy. And so I feel like that moment really like, really sums up like, sometimes logging off of Twitter, like the emotions of a win, never giving up, but also like the confusion of finish line posting up. And like, honestly, from here on out, like I'm probably just going to keep my hands on the bars for a little while because it's really confusing. And I think a lot of people are very quick to criticize.
Oh yeah.
But I think in a moment like that was the biggest win of my career. I think a lot of people probably would have made emotional mistakes like that as well. So yeah. I try not to criticize unless I've been there because I'm like, yeah, I have no idea like what this person would have, like what I would have done in that person's situation. So,
well, that's a huge point. And the other huge point is that you won the race. So it's all a moot point. And yeah, it bugs the heck out of me. The whole social media, I love social media. It's made me be able to do what I do, but at the same time, it's people. I get explained stuff all the time, you know. It's just like, come on, people. Let's just enjoy it.
Growing up, the saying that was always in like elementary school when someone was wearing like, the same jeans as you or whatever is, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. And I think in the internet age, criticism is the most sincere form of flattery because it shows that you're doing something right that people don't like, or like you're doing something that people don't like. So like people were criticizing me because I didn't win correctly. And so I think like I sometimes like, this is the only thing that keeps me from like throwing my phone against a wall sometimes is I'm like, all right, this person's criticizing me. But I did win the race. So like, just remember that, like, you're okay. Like you won the race. You're fine. Just chill out. Like, don't be mad because like, if you hadn't won, they wouldn't be criticizing you. Do you know what I mean? So that's the only way that I can really remember. And that's like one of the things I really tried to drive home with this talk, is like the talk that I did to these young women at the bike shop was like, yeah, if someone's criticizing you, chances are they probably don't know you. And that means that like they found your account online and like they're looking and they're like taking the time out of their day to say something to you. And I was like, so they're like, they care in a really, really backwards way. They really care.
Yeah.
And so
it's just laziness. It's laziness. It's like, and that's the thing that annoys me because it's like people, it's harder to come up with an original thought than it is just to, you know, react and criticize. And in my approach for that, and I probably shouldn't give this away, but if I ever say to anybody thanks for the feedback, that's basically me just saying F you.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. I very, very rarely respond.
Which is a good policy.
Which is good, but I did one time, someone said something so mean to me. And they actually didn't even tweet at me. So I should not admit this, but I, after a big race.
Subtweeting is just the worst when you don't even know it's out there. Yeah.
Well, it's bad because like subtweeting, if they were like, sometimes women like put their arm up too soon at a big crit. That's one thing. So I'm like, I know this is about me, but like if you write Ellen Noble in a tweet, you don't at me, but like you write my name. When I search my name on Twitter to see if there are any articles or anything after a race, like I'm going to see this.
Right.
So like after I won Pan Ams this year, I wanted to see if anyone had written like Ella Noble wins Pan American Championships. Like I like to try to stay on top of media and stuff. And I also had like an 18-hour van ride. So I'm going to start searching my name on Twitter. And I came across one where a guy criticized me for saying like too much when I was on Behind the Barriers at 16.
Oh,
I was a 16-year-old high school student that said like too much. And he said, yeah, you know, at least don't feel bad because Ella Noble said like 1,000 times in her Behind the Barriers thing. And I tweeted and I was like, what if I told you that I completely changed the way I talked after watching that video? And I did not enjoy a single second of watching my time on Behind the Barriers because of that. And I'm like so self-conscious about it because I really wanted him to know. I'm like, I see you, I'm reading what you're saying, and you have no idea how sensitive I am about that. It's to the point I almost completely eliminated like from my vocabulary. But I was really embarrassed. I didn't want to promote my Behind the Barriers episode because I was so embarrassed of it.
Oh, that's just awful.
Yeah. And so I was like, I want you to know that I see this. And this is why you should not subtweet about people, because it's going to come back.
Yeah. No, in that instance, it's good. And they should have some accountability for doing that. Man, that's... that kind of stuff. I don't know. Again, going back to being a dad of two daughters, like just the stuff that you brought up, like the body image stuff and everything else that you have to deal with, that dudes don't have to deal with that stuff. There's a lot more going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, trying to be like, it's hard enough to be an athlete, but when everyone expects you to be pretty and put together all the time, it's really hard. People expect you to look nice and stuff when it's like we just got done literally like fighting each other to the death for this race, and then you want us to look nice as well. I just feel like it's not something that you expect from men.
Yeah,
it's really challenging.
I noticed that when I was covering these mountain bike World Cups, especially the end of just the difference in the corral after the race between the elite women and the elite men, where everybody's, you know, making sure they're getting cleaned up, making sure they have a hat on, making sure, you know, it's all just, yeah, the presentation is just so much more, it seems like, on the top of their brain, where the dudes really aren't really worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've been talking for over an hour. Normally, I like to get into just sort of the background, how you started racing and that kind of stuff. But what I'm going to do, because I'd love to talk to you again in the future, what I'm going to do right now is plug my buddy Josh, who does the Bicycle Story. And tell everybody
to go to Josh before.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Bicyclestory.com. Go to the Ella Noble interview, and then you did a really nice sort of background on how you came up in mountain biking and all that.
Yeah.
So folks can go read that, and then maybe in the future when we talk again, we can get more into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I do also, since I'm going to try to get this up today, and I want to make sure that Colin is happy. You can go ahead and hype Narweasels a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really excited actually to go back to Narweasels. I know it's a new course, but Colin always puts on really, really, really great events. I can't wait to race at a Scutney. I've never done it. I've never ridden at this venue before. It's in Vermont. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm excited to kind of go back to my roots a little bit again after 3 long weeks of racing road. I'm really excited to get some Narweasels action tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's good to hear that that's still sort of home for you, back on the dirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if I go to the road in the future, I will always race local mountain bike races when I can, and mountain biking will always be my kind of vacation and like where I go to just have fun.
Great. So, do you have any Aspire, sort of like there was the Book Across with Jeremy last year, anything like that planned this year, or you guys don't know yet, or stuff we should be looking out for?
Nothing, nothing for me individually. I believe that, yeah, Aspire will definitely be producing a lot of content in a lot of ways. So I think that's actually something I'm super, super excited about. There is a lot of, like, you know, we've talked a lot today about negativity in social media, but there's actually so much positivity and so many good things that can come from it. And what I really like about being on Aspire so far, I mean, just in the couple of weeks, is like how much value Aspire puts into social media. And like, I think it really makes us valuable as riders, especially like, it's cool to see, you know, Jeremy has a really, really strong social media presence and he also wins races. I feel like sometimes there's a disconnect. Like sometimes people just have a really, really good social media presence, but they don't, like they're not super competitive racers. And sometimes like people are really, really, really good racers, but they don't quite crush the social media. So it's like, it's really cool to see Jeremy do such a good job with both. And that's something that I'm trying to work towards as well. So I think like, you know, you'll be seeing blog posts from us personally, some really fun and like colorful press releases, from the team. Hopefully you'll be seeing some really fun and also professional content on both of our social, on both of our pages. We both love using Snapchat.
Yeah. So give everybody the rundown on where they can find you, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat,
you can
blog.
Get me on basically any social media platform at Ellen Likes Bikes. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I am also on Facebook, facebook.com/ Ellen Noble Cyclist. I don't really use that page too much, but if I think for the cyclocross season, that's where I'm phasing towards. I need to get better about updating that page, and I think that could be good for me. Yeah, that's about it. I use Instagram mostly, but Snapchat's becoming mostly when I'm with Jeremy, I use Snapchat. Like when I'm at home, I don't Snapchat that much, but like whenever we're on the road, I just kind of get competitive and I'm like,
yeah,
oh, well, Jeremy's Snapchatting something cool. I'm going to Snapchat something cool as well.
He's actually good. I almost had to say, like when we were in Japan and he was on it all the time, I was like, okay, I need to start doing that. And it just, I couldn't do it.
I know. I can't believe it. Like I don't care about it. And then all of a sudden when I'm with him, I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. I need to start Snapchatting now. It's even hard to say, but yeah.
All right. Last question for you.
Okay.
Since you're on Aspire now, it's Rafa, mm-hmm. Focus, also BMW. You get in a car.
Yep. No.
Oh, come on. You have to demand. I'll come in and negotiate this for you. After the results start rolling in this year, that's going to be the next step. You got to get a lease for a BMW.
Okay. Well, I will not be personally driving a car. I basically don't drive a car.
Now that I
live in the middle of nowhere, I might start using my car a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you will definitely be seeing us rolling up to races, bumping some sick music in the BMW, in the team car.
Outstanding.
And yeah, it's pretty cool. We drove it to the airport the other day. It's the height of luxury.
Yeah.
That car is baller.
Yeah.
I mean, even the back seat is comfortable. Like Jeremy and his wife were in the two front seats and I was in the back seat, and it has like air conditioned seats, heated seats. Like you can adjust all of your own temperature. I was like, this is nicer than my house. I'm not kidding. Like this is so nice. It's insane.
We were leaving the UCI meetings in Asheville after Nationals, and I'm pulling out, getting ready to drive back to DC in my 1998 Subaru Outback, and this guy like pulls outside of me, honks, like rolls down the window, like, hey, Jeremy and his brand new, you know, BMW. I'm like, all right, I see how it is.
Yep.
That's
well,
awesome.
It's funny in the car, because like the cars that like the rest of us drive are like, you know, we're cyclists. Like, what do you think we drive? You know, like wagons and this and that. And then we'll be like, all right, let's go here. All right, we'll take the BMW. And we all get in, we're like, nice.
Awesome.
You know, it's a drastic change.
All right.
But it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. Well, congratulations on the road season so far. It's been awesome to watch that. Congratulations on Aspire, and you'll look forward to the upcoming cyclocross season, and good luck in Gnarweasels.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't wait. Can't wait. Very excited.
Thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a good one.
All right, there you have it. That was Ellen Noble. Now, doesn't everybody feel better about themselves? Go out and just crush life.
Yeah. JBV Coaching, once again, I want to thank those guys for sponsoring the program, jbvcoaching.com, also wideanglepodium.com. Go there, become a member, donate, and help support great programming. Finally, I wanted to remind everyone that we have available Skills Drills and Belly Aches, a cyclocross primer. This is the cyclocross book that I wrote along with Dan Tilley. We got photography by Bruce Buckley, and it features Jeremy Powers, both in, he is your model for how to do proper technique in the photographs, and also giving his tips throughout. It is available at cyclocrossbook.com, also available at amazon.com. So get your orders in. I will get those books out to you ASAP, and you can start preparing for the upcoming season. Thanks a lot for listening, and we will be back next week with another Crosshairs Radio.